And I was so enjoying talking to the guests here in the studio that I completely missed noticing that 12:30 had gone by. It is 12:30 here at KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend. I'm Taylor Clark, and I am here with my co-host John Morrow for Bureaucracy Now. Welcome, John.
Thank you, Taylor. It's so fun to be in the studio.
We were not paying attention to the time.
No, I mean we could blame it on the weather. We could blame it on the Sage's chattiness. But we've got a good lineup here.
Yeah.
Today.
So you've brought guests. So I brought the dog.
I mean, Sage, you know, that's the theme here, so that's a good start. But we've got a few things to talk through today, but I do want to introduce esteemed guests. It's a little bit of a moment for me here because we have both Terry Nomura, who is, wears 1,000 hats in the community and has
just a few.
Okay. enough to fit squarely on many, many heads and heavy shoulders there to carry the burden. I'm really excited about talking about housing with Terry. She's been in this mix from multiple angles for a very long time. And I'm also thrilled to have State Representative and Capital Budget Chair Steve Theringer here in the studio, who also really gives a rip about housing. Hi, Steve.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
I'm glad to have an opportunity to be with you guys today.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us.
So maybe at the outset, do you have a quick question? We want to clear the air on something, or do you want to jump into housing, Taylor?
No, actually, I think it would be really, given that it was above the fold in the PDN, and I understand there's something in the leader about it today, and there's, you know, 2,300 people signing a petition. I think we have to discuss housing for raccoons.
I am
purposely trying to make light of it, But we have, you know, we have a city statement on one side. We have an esteemed community member, and I guess that my question is, for Kevin's Raccoon House, is there a path forward where we might find a win-win for all involved? I hope there is.
Boy, yeah. I mean, you know, that's going to be hard to say no to. Luckily, I don't have to.
Good.
So just the quick bit on that, and this probably won't be the last time we get a chance to talk about it. I feel like just pumping the brakes, taking a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk to my team and when I talk to the elected officials that represent us, there is strong interest in finding common ground and working through a challenge together. And I feel like that's how our community does it.
It is.
And it's not always easy, and it sometimes is bumpy. And let me tell you, it's been one of those things. But hand over heart, we are really trying to work through this, and I've got a team who's being creative.
Good.
They're being collaborative. They're very open-minded. And, you know, we'll get through this. I understand how much this community thrives on an artistic identity, creativity, ingenuity,
whimsy,
and beauty. And mm-hmm. so I know that. And when I look around town, I see that. And that is not something that we need to be counter to. We want to encourage and enable that thing to flourish. We also have other desires for fairness and protecting health and well-being. We could do it all. We just have to work together.
And process and all the other things that matter.
Sure,
yeah.
Sure. But we'll get there, folks. Don't you worry. We'll get there.
So the message is let's take a deep breath and watch this space and keep and hope.
And maybe just be kind, especially to my team. I feel a little protective. Just be kind. A lot of times when I think I know something I don't and I get upset about it, it's probably because I don't have all the information or I'm not hearing someone else's perspective. Just try to remember the other person has some feelings too, and let's just be kind.
Well, kindness is another Port Townsend core value, I would say.
Yeah,
so let's remember that kindness.
Speaking of being kind, we have two very patient special guests, and they're being very kind. How do we want to crack into housing? I feel like, you know, I literally was instructed on Monday night to hand our state legislative agenda as adopted by the Port Townsend City Council to our state delegation. And I literally just handed Steve a piece of paper with that exact agenda on it. Sorry to broadside you, Representative Therringer, but I know this has been an ongoing dialogue we've had for a number of years around housing, and you've been a true leader for the 24th here. Any thoughts about where we are with housing and what we're doing here in town?
Yeah, well, thanks, John and Taylor, and thanks, everybody, for, voting last week. And the results, I think, were good. And obviously, I very much appreciate the support that comes out of East Jefferson and Port Townsend. As far as housing, I mean, I think, and I'm really interested to hear, Terry, as John mentioned in introducing her, has a number of projects that we're working on. And what we try to do at the state level, what I try to do as capital and budget chair, is make sure we have programs that work with local government, because that's really, that's where the land use and the zoning is, whether it's raccoon housing or other things. But we try to, work with them to be able to have programs that help them build the units or provide the sewer and water for that. And I know, so I'm sort of interested, I guess, in hearing what Terry's projects are, and then maybe we can talk about how the state can help with that and where the different categories that we have for housing. I mean, we have spent over this biennium roughly $1 billion on housing, various types of housing and various programs, whether it be community infrastructure projects, sewer and water, which Port Townsend's availed themselves, whether it's rapid response, where we were able to buy a motel. Bayside was able to buy, a motel in Hadlock for more immediate housing. We've been supporting tiny homes across the state. So we're trying to create a full spectrum of funding at the state level that helps local advocates meet their needs and fill those gaps. So maybe it'd be great for us to hear from Terry and see what she's got on the on her list.
Hi, Terry.
Okay. Hi, everyone. So I'm a real estate agent, have been for 27 years. And during those 27 years, my husband and I have been in the process, have built 6 homes. And we're right now have a permit into the city of Port Townsend. Wish us luck. And
good luck.
And are getting ready to build our 7th home, not for us to live in, but as rentals. And it'll be a house and an ADU right here on 19th Street with a view out to Kaitai Lagoon. So that's one of my projects. And another project that I'm working on is with the Olympic Housing Trust. And that used to be called Homeward Bound. It's a nonprofit. And we've got a great board now. I mean, really, knock your socks off. And the board has decided to have a holiday party, and there's going to be an unveiling of a new project in Port Townsend on December 11th at 5:00 at the Palindrome. So that's a Sunday late afternoon after the wine tasting bar closes. Anyhow, come on out and join us. Come see our new project. It's pretty exciting. So a local resident has donated a piece of land to the Olympic Housing Trust. It's in process.
Yeah.
And on the other portion of the same piece of land is a large community garden. And the food bank right here is actually participating in this community bank garden as well. And so our hope is to build 5 townhouses that are subsidized housing. Really, affordable housing is kind of a misnomer.
Right. There's a whole range of things here, and we discuss low income housing, subsidized housing, with a so-called workforce housing.
Many words.
Market rate housing,
and they're just confusing.
And it is confusing, but we're talking about really trying to. I mean, generally, we're talking about trying to build houses that meet a range of income levels, presumably, although not in this project.
Okay, this particular project, we are aiming to produce these townhouses. There'll be two two-bedroom townhouses and two three-bedroom units, and they'll be built side by side on this piece of land. And what's cool about Olympic Housing Trust, I mean, it being a nonprofit, is that Olympic Housing Trust owns the land. So the land value does not go into the mortgage. And the buyer will buy just the unit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so by just that simple math, it's decreasing the mortgage payment.
Right.
Okay, and Olympic Housing Trust does charge a monthly fee, but it's very nominal. And then, of course, the homeowner will have to pay their taxes and insurance on top of that. But our goal is to really provide permanently affordable housing. And that permanently is a very important part of creating quote-unquote affordable housing. Because if you don't put that into the mix, then somebody can sell that property at market rate,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden it's no longer affordable housing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a problem.
I mean, it's interesting too. the concept is similar to what we've been grateful for Representative Theringer for, because when the city uses a great partnership with the state and support and leadership from the state to purchase a property, suddenly that $1.3 million for 14.4 acres at Evans Vista is out of the picture in terms of the cost to develop. And when we hopefully leverage $2.5 million of federal funds for sewer infrastructure, that also takes those requirements out of the picture for development. And the more we can get it development ready and make it less expensive, and maybe even have some permanent affordability there, I mean, that's kind of what we're aiming for. It pencils out, and I think that's the thing, is it's got to come from somewhere. You know, there's a subsidy somewhere, whether it be local, state, or federal,
or private
or nonprofit. Exactly, that's a great point.
But I think what Terry's saying here is that the way that this project is structured is that it then creates housing units, which even if they're sold, because they're not sold with the land, it keeps the price down.
Well, they have to sign a contract with Olympic Housing Trust that, you know, more or less makes it so that it continues in that same way. And Habitat has done something similar.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was a problem for us at the state with owner-built housing like Habitat, because as folks know, we can't as a state gift public funds. And so part of the challenge with Habitat, when the owner built the home but also owned the land, it was theirs, right? So those were actually public funds that were going to them. Mm-hmm. But the model that Terry's talking about, where the land is held either by Habitat or by the trust, in this case the Olympic Housing Trust, that eliminates that problem, because the dollars are going to that long-term. The long-term property is always going to be in either a nonprofit ownership or in the public sphere.
Right.
And then the equity still exists in the home, but that's that owner, you know, advantage.
I'm constantly amazed from the standpoint of somebody who's not in the biz that just the number of moving parts that are involved in how do you put together a package that meets, you know, one of these different income levels. It isn't easy.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes hard to understand what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Well, and I mean, I appreciate KPTZ dedicating some of the time for us to try to talk some of that through, and that we have community leaders that'll want to jump on the radio here and talk about it so that we can collectively understand it. And you make a good point, Taylor. And actually, there are some gaps. You know, one of the things that Steve will look at and read perhaps for the first time looking down at the sheet I just gave him is that we want to push out that, you know, area mean income threshold, because, you know, finding ways to do affordable housing under 80% AMI is a lot easier than between 80 and 120, or even we're starting to tilt toward 150% AMI. Things are changing so rapidly that, you know, we're talking about people who work at the institutions we all enjoy here, or you know, even for organizations like the city that are unable to find housing that's affordable. And so we're not looking at 30 to 50% of the area mean income. We're looking at something quite more substantial. And to Steve's point, you know, we cannot gift public funds. And so there's this gap right now that we're trying to work out and starting to position our legislative agenda to try to address that issue.
Yeah, and I think we'll address that at the state level also. It's this middle band, right? In a lot of programs, quite frankly, that, you know, that the public sector provides, the low end is, it's easier to access funds, whether it's for rent assistance or food or, you know, childcare. And the upper end, we don't need to be concerned about. It's that middle band that is really challenged with access to programs, and housing is one of those. And so we need to address that. And it's not unique to Port Townsend or East Jefferson. It's a challenge across the state. Mm-hmm. And as you said, Taylor, finding, getting all the cogs to fit together is a challenge. This community does that as well or better than anybody that, you know.
I think there's this theory that in Port Townsend that we would like to be the petri dish, the laboratory. We would like to try solutions that maybe haven't been tried somewhere else to maybe lead the way in that. And I think we have an opportunity to do that in this sort of thing. So
absolutely. Yeah. And some fierce constraints. I think we could all generally agree what the problem or problems are. And it's not getting necessarily any better the more we spend. I mean, I'm not saying we don't keep on looking at the problem and trying to understand it and identify it and see it as it morphs. But a lot of that energy we need to be throwing right at solutions and saying, let's test some new things. Let's understand what our constraints are. I mean, we need to know the things that would challenge, you know, our state constitution. I mean, there are questions. I'll be honest. I've asked our city attorney a number of questions. Well, can we try this? Can we try this? It's against the state constitution. Okay. Well, that's not going to necessarily change anytime soon. So there are some things that are off the table for us that in a state, maybe even nearby, is not a problem. And so even though I'm not arguing against outside examples, I think they're super helpful. But then there are some that don't fit into the strange
peg. We have to
peg.
Understand the environment that we're in.
Yeah, and Washington State's a unique beast. Mm-hmm. Yeah, a very unique beast. Yeah.
So another thing about housing just in general is that it's complicated, and there isn't a one way to do everything. Mm-hmm. And so what is needed actually on a community level is for the community to really be open to thinking through all these different ideas, and that each one of the possibilities are possible solutions for one group of people. And another group of people might need a different solution. And we need to all be embrace that and not just get headstrong about it's got to be my way or the highway.
I was going to say that's a really good point, that if somebody, you know, if I propose, you know, solution A and you propose solution B, it doesn't mean solution A is wrong. It might mean
absolutely.
That you're meeting a different set of needs. I just want to interrupt and just in case you're just joining us, you're listening to Bureaucracy Now here on KPTZ. I'm Taylor Clark. I'm here with my co-host, City Manager John Morrow, and today we're talking to State Representative Steve Theringer, and we're also talking to Realtor and Housing Advocate Terry Nomura.
Yeah.
So thank you for joining us. So now we go.
No, I was just going to pick up on what Terry said. I think that's a golden statement. It applies to almost any issue, right? I mean, you know, there's a little bit of the posturing. And again, I was sort of saying a little bit more subtly there about, you know, focusing on the problem. We know we need a little bit of everything across the board, and we could spend our energy there. And Terry's exactly right. I mean, you know, the strains that those who are facing emergency housing needs, you know, that their concerns are very different than somebody who's making 100 to 120% area mean income. They both deserve housing, you know, and we need to find solutions that fit in our community. So we could actually do multiple things at the same time and actually see it as a system. It's like an ecosystem that's actually quite related to each other, because ideally this is simplistic thinking maybe, but, you know, you can conceivably, if the system works, you can take somebody who has emergency housing needs and move them up the ladder into something that's more permanent and secure over time.
Which is good for them, and it frees up something at the emergency
Absolutely.
Housing level. By the way, Monday, a package of parking parking changes that doesn't that have to do with buildability? And
Yep, it does. The Planning Commission and the City Council have been in dialogue about removing parking requirements for ADUs, on-street parking. It's a productive conversation. You know, I think more to come in that space.
Yep.
And then I think, you know, just to pile on, it was also when we did our first public hearing on our budget, which includes, you know, well over $500,000 of additional resources for staffing and consultants to work through things like long-range planning around housing specifically, mm-hmm. a housing grants coordinator to think about how we leverage grant funding in partnership with agencies, a consultant contract that actually we're going to be looking at how to unlock residential capacity through code changes between now and April 1st. And why I say April 1st is because there is a current exemption for appeals until then in the state code, and we are asking leaders like Steve, who sit here
he's taking a note.
He just took out his pen, so that's promising. It's very promising to extend that safe harbor so that we can build that residential capacity in an urban area like Port Townsend without being challenged for providing housing for people who need it. That's a pretty big deal for us. And so we're going to be racing to meet that deadline, but we're hoping that we can do more after we meet that deadline if we get some legislative change.
So with the parking thing that you just mentioned, John, I want to point out that we really need to extend that beyond residential and ADU into multifamily housing, because multifamily housing, say you want to build a sixplex, and who's building a sixplex here? Very few have been built in the last 20 years. And why is that? They can't get it to pencil out, and part of the problem is parking. So there's that.
Terry is like clairvoyant because she's channeling the general sense of the conversation at council on Monday, which was, this is a good first step. Because we didn't scope it broadly, we want to make sure the public has an opportunity to weigh in fully on the scope of a larger remit around parking requirements. And we will do that because I think, you know, there is strong argument for particularly in an environment where we want more active connections, transit connections, livability and walkability, that the need for parking is not as significant. And it actually burdens the developer and the owner, renter, in paying for things they might not actually need. I mean, if you could walk next door to Aldrich's, you know, you might not need that parking spot, for an example.
Yeah. So is City Council going to be tasking the Planning Commission with a sort of another round on this? Was that your feeling?
That's the feeling. We're going to go another round. And actually, it's going to pair nicely with what we currently have on our work plan to look at parking, outside of...
We're looking at parking, downtown parking.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of looking at the larger scope, which is also another important thing for us to do, less so perhaps for housing affordability and more so for the livability of a downtown and also making sure that people have options, including parking, that we're actually managing for the outcomes we want. I would say I've said this before and it gets me in trouble, but we don't necessarily have a parking supply problem with about 1,200 spaces downtown. We have a parking management problem.
Yeah.
And we want to be able to optimize that.
I've heard you say that before, and I would tend to concur with that. I mean, one thing we don't want to do is we don't want to see us putting in parking garages, which I think was facetiously almost suggested.
It was, but I guess just like with a lot of things, I feel like to start the conversation with everything on the table, including that, because I think we should say, right, well, what are the pros and cons? You know, I mean, you know, there's a cost component to that, or there's an incentivizing, you know, car travel that could be argued for that. But, you know, we want to make sure all options are considered. And if we actually have an implementation plan for managing parking that emerges next year, we want it to serve everybody. We want to serve local businesses, those who live in the downtown core or elsewhere, employees, folks visiting. I mean, you know, I worked through a number of parking issues in larger cities, and it's fraught. Everyone's got a perspective, and that's great. We as a city need to set a framework to have that conversation as a community and get to the outcomes that we collectively want.
Yeah.
So parking, always part of housing, isn't it?
It always does seem to be, yeah. Well, I wanted to mention that there was this recent, you know, adopted a set of code changes on Monday, having that, and that's clearly a step in the direction that we want to head in terms of increasing the availability of ADUs.
Yeah. Terry?
So listeners out there, I want to tell you that you personally can be involved in the housing solutions, and each individual has an opportunity to get involved with the community conversation, but you can also look around you and say, do I have an extra room that I could rent out? do I have an extra space on my lot where I could possibly bring infrastructure in and put a tiny home there? Do I have room in my budget that I could build onto my existing house or create an ADU or something? Because we are lacking so much housing. I mean, if my measly little house in EDU is not going to put a dent in it. And it's,
no, but if you multiply that by all the other houses around it, I would think that in the standpoint of from the standpoint of being a realtor, you're in a position to advise new buyers, hey, look, you could do this. Have you considered it? And I'm assuming that that's the kind of argument you make.
It's possible, but, you know, people are, I don't know how to say this, not very imaginative. How's that? You know, they don't think very creatively in general. And the thing is that we all, on some level, want to protect ourselves from any kind of possible harm. But the reality is we've been way too careful.
We're also, though, I mean, we maybe protect ourselves from harm. We don't want somebody living in our backyard. But the flip side of that is we might want somebody living in our backyard.
Absolutely.
I think that's a great point. And maybe Steve can get the last word here. But before that, I'll say what we probably need to do is tell us a better story. And I've worked for a number of cities that have struggled to tell the story. But when they make it connect to people, and that actually having neighbors, more people in the community offers value to local businesses, amenities that we might not be able to afford right now. You know, we need to see the benefits because change is hard. I mean, believe me, I know that, and I really appreciate Terry raising that. But if the change is worth it and the benefits are perhaps irresistible or at least enticing, then I think we might be able to make some movement. And I think, you know, when I think of those who are moving into my neighborhood, or I think of the opportunity to feed transit, local businesses, the shoulder seasons, you know, to some degree, we all benefit from that. Eyes on the street. I mean, public safety, active transportation gets safer the more people use it. So I think there's some benefits we need to also include as part of this conversation.
Yeah. Steve?
Yeah, I think it's just generally, you know, the phrase is density by design. So it doesn't have to be, as we talked about earlier, it's not, a lot of these things aren't either or, right? It's just, you just do it smartly with a creative, with some ingenuity. And, there's some good things happening in the community. There's units, you know, there's the Seventh Haven project up by the hospital that the Community Action's putting in. That's going to be, bring on a number of units. You know, Bayside has, you know, bought another motel. That's, they're creating more units. The Hadlock sewer and getting those rates down. We're trying to work at the state to keep those hookup fees low, but that's going to create a lot of opportunity for housing within East Jefferson. So there are really good things happening. What Terry's, the project she's working on. So it's not all, it's still a huge challenge, but it's not as, you know, people are stepping up and we're finding solutions. And certainly the state wants to pay money, provide dollars if that's for sewer and water to develop these sites, or if that's actually to buy the units themselves or help Habitat do that. So there is progress being made. It's just these capital investments, they take time.
Yeah.
They don't happen in 2 weeks. It's 2 to 3 years.
Well, I'm encouraged. And from the standpoint of not knowing what's going on, I'm glad to hear things like that. Oh, good. Somebody's working on it. We're about out of time. So I'm going to say thank you, State Representative Steve Theringer.
Thank you.
And housing advocate and realtor Terry Nomura, thanks for joining us.
Thanks,
John,
for having me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
And as usual, we're going to go out here with some music. And you asked for kindness as a core value. This is a song called Deep Feeling.